Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Gestalten Podcast. My name is Martin Groschwald, and alongside me is my very, very dear colleague and friend, Eric Galina. Eric, hello.
Hello, Martin. Hello. How's it going?
All is well. Unfortunately, I was in Tokyo, so you know things could be a little bit better. But you've just come back from your holiday, so you know you're kind of completely refreshed. You know, full of energy now. So we thought we were actually going to do a new podcast this time about the Tokyo Motor Show. Yeah, you excited? You ready for this?
Sounds good.
Cool. All right. Then let's actually get cracking on this one. And let's give the listeners a little bit of an overview on the Tokyo Motor Show. So the Tokyo Motor Show is one of these shows that are happening biannually. So that means it's every couple of years, usually in the odd years. So 2019, 2017, 15. The next one, hopefully, will be in 2021. And the TMS has always been the biggest show for the Japanese manufacturers, of course. In the past, when the show was a little bit bigger, we had revealings or unveilings of cars such as the first Bugatti Chiron was shown over there. But in the last few years, this has really become the go-to show for most of the Japanese car manufacturers to show, you know, their quirkiness, their weirdness, their ideas, their innovation, and everything that the common Westerner would probably say is a little bit strange. Is that a good sum up from what we can gather from the past few years of Tokyo?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely Tokyo is, the Japanese shows are generally very quirky, to use your word. It's certainly, yeah. I mean, for the other motor shows that we see in the U.S. and in Europe, it's very unique. Even to China, it's very unique.
Correct, and we have to explain this maybe a little bit. So, if you've never been to Tokyo, if you've never been to Japan, you will not understand where this quirkiness is coming from. So, the Japanese, they see design, they see, you know, their products a little bit differently. They have different kind of restrictions to them as well, which is, you know, for example, the K cars. So, you know, tiny cars with a very limited amount of engine capacity. So they're not allowed to, you know, go over a certain kind of engine power. That's something that they're using a lot in Japan, if you've ever been there. And obviously the Tokyo Motor Show still shows a lot for that. So it's still a very, you know, local show, but it is, in my opinion, the most fun show in the world because there are still people out there that are, you know, trying to do something different. They're trying to show you some weirder cars that you would probably not see in a Western world or in a Chinese show because they all seem a little bit outside the box thinking or, like, you know, very much different to your day-to-day activity. But this is what, you know, makes the show absolutely fantastic. It's, you know, not necessarily right in the middle of Tokyo, but it's super easy accessible to actually get to the show. It used to be very big. It's now a little bit smaller and a little bit more narrow. But if you go in there, you can see, you know, I remember I was there in 2017. And I think Toyota had a total of like four or five show cars there. So they definitely still take this whole thing extremely seriously. And what we can say, I think we're going to talk mostly about cars that are from Japanese manufacturers, simply because there's not that many non-Japanese manufacturers that have shown something completely new, which is quite a bit unfortunate, but it was to be expected, I think.
Yeah, I mean, in the past few years, we've seen Tokyo go from a must-attend event to now very much a purely nationalistic show. So, you know, it's a domestic show where domestic manufacturers shine. So obviously, Nissan, Toyota brands are going to be getting the limelight, and Mazda as well. But very much a Japanese show.
Very much so. And let's get cracking with the Japanese manufacturers. And I would actually like to start with Suzuki, because I think Suzuki was one of these brands we never really spoke about on the pod. And we don't know for what reason that is, because they're not really well represented on the European shows. They don't really show these new things. But I would like to start with them because they had a couple of cool concepts. And these concepts were clearly inspired by the idea of product design, of potentially what is now the Honda E, you know, so the electric car. And I would like to start with the Suzuki Wacu Spo, which is, it almost looks like a direct competitor to what the Honda E is nowadays. Wouldn't you say, Eric?
I suppose so. Yes. I mean, it's a notchback design that does some actually really weird things over at the rear. It transforms actually into a little shooting brake. But yeah, it's very much a K car. And Suzuki's really been known to showcase quite well at the Tokyo Motor Show. And, you know, yeah, for some reason, I mean, you know, perhaps because they don't sell all that well outside of the Japanese market, but the Japanese market is clearly their home market. And they always have much fanfare with vehicles that are unveiled there.
I 100% agree. And if you look into the Wacu Spo, you can clearly see that Honda is a little bit ahead, I think, in terms of the design language, in terms of the design execution as well. It doesn't look as well refined. The surfacing doesn't look as good. I am not a big fan of the two color tone that they have put on it. The lights look a little bit weird. You know, there's some kind of I don't know, is it a grill or something like that on the lower end, where I'm not 100% sure. So you have a little bit of a feeling that this is something like, oh, you know, like look at people like the Honda. Let's do something towards that kind of direction. It looks a little bit unfinished from my perspective.
Well, yeah, I mean, like you said, we didn't attend. I wasn't there, so I don't know what these cars look like in the metal. I think it's really important. Like, a lot of design decisions are made by looking at photographs and things like that. But it's really, really difficult to judge a design unless you kind of walk around it. I mean, there's some interesting details on this car. To me, it's, you know, when you look at it from a silhouette perspective, even in the three-quarter view, it's very much has a retro look to it. You know, Japanese kind of really enjoy this. And, you know, this 1960s, 70s kind of era when, you know, they were really quite strong, putting out cars in all markets and very, very strong in terms of sales. Now, Suzuki has been for a long time now kind of clinging to that. They're not showing particularly well advanced things, and this Wacu Spo is definitely case in point for that. You know, it looks like maybe a Datsun 510. I mean, there's some very interesting elements. Like, again, I'm just judging from photos, but it has this this chrome applique that kind of just underscores the belt line and brings it over into the hood. I'm not mad at the two-tone color scheme. That's fine. You know, it is a very small car, so they needed to get some sort of visual drama. And I think the two-tone works well the way it comes all the way down the fender into the front. It is nice. It's an interesting treatment that we haven't really seen before. And, you know, they've done two-tone on a lot of the concepts that they've shown in the past as well. So this year was no exception.
Yeah, and they've continued two-tone with their second concept that they've shown, which is called the Hanare concept, which is, again, a toaster. I know, you know, we've had this conversation beforehand, and, you know, some people don't like me using the term toaster. It is a box. But apart from the wheels, I actually like this thing. It is ultra Japanese. It looks like, you know, it's covered in wood with nice little accents in white on this as well. But if you actually open it, which has a massive gold wing door with it as well, there's an absolutely massive screen in there. Of course, we're in Japan, so technology and, you know, screens need to be in an appropriate size. And it is an autonomous, you know, an autonomous object, pretty much. But this seems actually, you know, quite Japanese. It seems quite cool. It seems quite clean, what Japanese, you know, design culture is anyways. It seems very exact. You know, it seems that it's just, it just works very well. Is it something special? Is it something that we have not seen before? Definitely not. But it's still something where I'm saying, like, whoa, this is, you know, this seems like it could come to life once the autonomous world is actually coming to the next step, because it does have this big screen. It doesn't have, you know, fancy technology that we will probably not see in a very short amount of time. So this seems a bit more like a realistic concept moving into the generation of autonomous driving.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, it's a mono volume. It's a van, basically, but clearly there's no driver's seat. It's just two lounge chairs on either side with a massive screen inside. Yeah, I mean, how close to production this would potentially be is, you know, I don't think it's anywhere near. People, you know, I tend to have a pessimistic attitude towards autonomy anyway. I don't think that we're going to see this anytime soon. But, you know, nonetheless, it doesn't prevent manufacturers from showcasing it in various different forms. Mm. So I mean, from an exterior perspective, yeah, there's some like fender flares over the wheels. It's, you know, they have these slats that it's not actually made of wood. It's just it needed to do, you know, to add some sort of visual drama to it. So, you know, those lines kind of, you know, tend to make it sit further down and less like, you know, more horizontal. Mm. But, you know, it's just a two-tone vehicle with, you know, a couple of lines in there to make it look like it's perhaps wood covered. But yeah, it's a little box. It's interesting. You know, the front is obviously very technology laden with the whole DRG being a screen again. Showcasing the lights and probably various different, you know, modes or commands or whatever, like messages perhaps to other road users. Yeah, I mean, it's again like I think the wheel covers, the spats, if you will, over the wheels, is very much a retro homage feel to it, and yeah.
Hmm.
It's an interesting little vehicle. I mean, certainly with the way the DLO is, you know, it doesn't have much in terms of windows. It's got a very thin kind of, you know, windscreen and a very thin backlight as well. And then even on the sides, it's like there are no real windows, just a very thin DLO above the entire kind of volume of this vehicle. So yeah, that is interesting. It could be potentially claustrophobic inside there, but
speaking about motion sickness there, yeah. You're getting sick because you can't look outside.
If you're happy just to look at a screen and, you know, be transported to places, okay. I mean, the thing is, you know, I don't know how big this is in terms of size wise. It's probably 4 meters and change, I would assume. Yeah, it doesn't have that much in terms of seating capacity. And again, I'm just seeing it in one guise with a big screen over one side of the door. So if all you've got is two or three seats in something, it's not really very efficient either. So I don't know. It leaves me lukewarm. It's not particularly adventurous. And I think that's about all I can say.
I can tell you what does not leave me lukewarm, but extremely hot in that sense. It is one of my favorite cars, and they've shown a couple of concepts. They're not very special, but I just want to mention them here. This is the Suzuki Hustler. Now, this is by far the coolest name for any car that you can think of. It's a little K car that, you know, has a lot of space in it. And they've just kind of developed a little bit further. So it's nothing really special. If you've ever seen a Hustler before, you know, you've seen them. And, you know, I know a lot of people that love them. I personally, you know, it's one of my absolute favorite cars. But I am always happy to see Suzuki to kind of develop the Hustler forward, to not drop it. You know, it's such a cool little concept. You can do so many cool things around it as well. I've seen, you know, Hustlers, Custom 8 is almost like a Hummer H2, obviously in much smaller, you know, G-classes, those kind of things. I was just very happy to see a couple of pictures. So special mention to the Suzuki Hustler because it's one of my favorites on the Suzuki stand. And Eric, what would you prefer? We go to Mazda or do you want to go to Nissan? What's your wish?
I just want to make one quick comment. Like,
oh, yeah.
I haven't been to Tokyo in a number of years, but I remember seeing this Hustler concept the last time I went, and that probably would have been about 6 years or 7 years ago. I remember seeing this thing already then, and it's like, why is it still a concept? I mean, surely it's production by now. And I don't really, yeah, I don't know. I think the Jimny hits it out of the park. This thing, no, proportionally, it's not right. There's a lot of things that leave me kind of questioning why they've done it in certain ways. From a utilitarian perspective, sure. But, you know, it's not going to have the same appeal as some other vehicles of this size. Again, like the Jimny, in my opinion, is way better than this. This, you know, proportionally just I'm not entirely sold on it. And I remember, again, as a concept many, many years ago, so I don't understand why it's still built a concept.
Okay, anyway. So just to explain this, so the Suzuki Hustler itself is a production car. So you can buy this, you know, it's being exported also to Russia, you know, to places outside of Japan. These concepts that they're doing is pretty much just like, you know, they show what could we do with this. So this red one is a little bit more like, you know, Defender type, a little bit more adventurous. The pink one that they have shown there, I have no idea what this is supposed to be like. I think it's just the facelift of the Hustler that they're kind of previewing here. But yeah, I mean, I love these things. I've seen them on the road in Tokyo, in Japan, and you know, I literally, you know, I got on the plane, I had my little Tommy Car toy Hustler with me, and I absolutely love it. And I wanted to buy one in Japan, but unfortunately, they're not road legal in Germany. It's really difficult to get licenses for K cars. But yeah, the current generation Hustler, I'm a big fan. But I do see where you're coming from, because it's sometimes strange.
It's just a color and trim job, and then they call it with a couple of accessories, and then they call it a concept.
Exactly. It's called marketing. All right. Nissan or Mazda, what do you prefer, Eric?
I mean, a lot of people have been raving about this this new Mazda, and from a powertrain perspective, I guess, you know, it's it makes sense. It's the first electric car from Mazda. Yeah, it's all right from a design perspective, but I'm not. Yeah, I mean, I kind of like where they've gone with this whole coupe like roofline, I suppose. Again, it's very difficult to judge because all of these pictures that we're viewing right now were taken on the stand, and it's either press or very dark stands. And I don't know. I guess the Mazda. Let's talk about that for a little bit. I mean, it kind of follows on from the design direction that they've gone with the cars. It's far more of an SUV, you know, crossover proposal, again with a fastback roof, which is kind of weird. But I like the fact that they are using the doors from the RX-8, and you know, so that's very Mazda-like. But all of these little SUVs, they have around the wheel arches this like big rubber addendum that kind of, you know, and it's not even rubber; it's just plastic to make it look more rugged than it is. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, again, another two-tone vehicle. I like the lamps, I suppose. You know, that's again following Mazda's, you know, what they've done. This is very near production ready, if it's not production already. So it's yeah, it's an interesting take on the first electric car from Mazda. But it makes sense that they would build a little SUV, because they've got to store all the batteries underneath. So it's got to be a high riding vehicle anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, for me, and again, we have to mention this, we obviously unfortunately have not been to Tokyo this year. I'm not so sure about this. I mean, if I see the way that Mazda has been, you know, progressing over the past, let's say, few years with the Kodo design language and everything that goes along with it, this almost seems like a step, you know, a step of stalling, or, you know, a step of not moving forward, unfortunately. I think the rear in particular is not well resolved. It looks like it comes from a kind of an Opel / you know, Vauxhall, you know, where I'm saying, like, you know, they could have worked a little bit better with this. It's not as fluid, you know, from the surfacing and from the overall picture. It looks a little bit more edgy. And I'm not quite sure if they had to do that based on saving money because obviously electric vehicles are so expensive in terms of the platform and in terms of the components at the moment, or where the reason comes from. So it's what you like to say, like, you know, you're not mad at it. Like, I'm not mad at it. I'm just kind of disappointed that they haven't moved on from, or like, you know, they haven't used the design language to such a degree on what, you know, what the past they have shown. And this is a little bit of a letdown, I have to say. It's unfortunately something where I'm saying, like, that could have been much better. And it seems that they might have had too much budget restraints due to the electric platform to make this actually become a really nice Mazda.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that you say the rear is your less. I mean, besides the fastback kind of roof line, I like the afterburner tail lamps. You know, that's one element that Mazda's been doing well. The lighting design on these cars is quite good. For cheap cars, yeah. I mean, they do really pull out all the stops when it comes to lighting as well. They should, because that is a really important element visually for any vehicle. So, you know, whilst I'm not a big fan of the typology or indeed the profile with the sloping roofline, it kind of, you know, decreases a lot of the practicality of that vehicle. It's still, I guess, an interesting proposition from Mazda for its first electric car.
I do agree on that one. And I think what I want to express with this is I've read a lot of Twitter during the motor show, and I've seen a lot of comments on this one. And I think the general kind of disappointment with this car, the MX-30, came because the stuff that Mazda brought out over the past few years was so good that this seems like, oh, this is not as good as the other stuff that we have seen, you know? So I think compared to other companies, this is still obviously quite good. But in regards to what we have seen from Mazda, you would kind of, you had a little bit of the feeling like, you know, this could be better. So that's a little bit of the feeling that I had from looking into the car. But generally speaking, it's all right. And if it comes like that, it does look good enough to obviously have a good place into the market. I mean, the quality of the Mazda has always been quite good for the price that they had. So let's see if this car comes exactly like this, or if it's just, you know, very close to production, but not 100% done yet. All right.
So moving on.
Nissan? You want to do Nissan?
Yeah. The Nissan Ariya is the crossover concept that was shown. There's no like production indication on this, but again, it's it tends to follow what other manufacturers have done with the glossy, black piano black appliques around the wheels. We've seen that on numerous concept cars in the past. An off-roader, I don't really think it makes much sense. But again, I don't think these are off-road vehicles per se. It's just a crossover, so it has more space than a conventional car. And again, for packaging, it makes sense. Again, I don't know if there's any production intent for this. There's interesting design elements. The use of copper is pervasive throughout many of these concepts, which is obviously signaling electric propulsion. So that's definitely one of the huge trends that's going on right now is the use of copper. And the grill is still there, but, you know, obviously not as functional as it would be in an ICE car. But it's not a bad looking car. It was developed entirely in Japan. It's got a fastback kind of sloping roofline to the rear, and bespoke tires as well, like many of these concepts do. So it's really just a good way to, you know, I guess, stir up some interest in this EV revolution, where they could potentially go what automotive manufacturers are thinking about in terms of what to provide the clients that are going to be making this transition into electric.
From the pictures, you can clearly see that there is, and we've spoken about this a lot, I think, in the past, you know, motor show reviews, there's a lot of talent in Nissan. I think this is what becomes almost evident when you see, in particular, the Ariya show car. It's just well made, you know. It, for me, the surfacing, the proportions fit. I'm just not 100% sure. I don't like these crossovers, you know. I don't like them from any manufacturer, no matter if they're concepts or if they're, you know, already on the streets with BMW X6, the Mercedes GLE, I think, or whatever it is. Like, you know, I just don't see the point of these cars because they're big, but you don't have any space in them. But what I do like is that, you know, Nissan seems to find a language that comes with the front. If we look back into the other show cars that they have presented, it seems that they're finding their rhythm, that they're finding their way of what they want the Nissan front to be in the future. They will be playing a lot with lighting, of course, on that one. And I think this car is quite confident. You see that it seems like they know what they want to do. I know, compared to the other concept, this seems much more towards the production direction with the proportions and all these things. So it's once again, it doesn't blow me away, but you do understand, you do see that Nissan know what they're doing, and you can see that this is clearly a step forward towards their design direction now. And you can clearly see where Alfonso is coming in now slowly after taking over from Shiro Nakamura, where, you know, you see these changes. This car looks much more, I would say, European. You know, this could also be coming from an American or a Western manufacturer. This doesn't necessarily need to come from a Japanese one. And this is where you see the maturity and, you know, where Nissan wants to be in terms of also its market, I think. So it's a very interesting one. And I'm going to be interested to see where we see the keys or the cues in the new then production models, or like the first cues in the new production models from cars like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the exterior is one thing, but the interior, I think, is quite nice. I mean, it definitely has a premium feel. It's really using technology to its benefit, for sure, like with all of the embedded, a lot of concepts are doing this now in terms of embedding the controls into the surfaces where you don't actually have dials or anything. It's all kind of touch and embedded within the IP, for example. The screens, of course, are paramount, but it has some really cool, interesting lighting elements as well within the doors and around on the IP, as well as in the center control console on the armrest. So technology is definitely taking a front seat, quite literally, in terms of augmenting the premium kind of value, perceived quality of this vehicle, because it's quite sedate, but it's also very modern and appealing and minimalistic and very pleasing and definitely sophisticated. So I think the interior of this car is quite nice.
Yeah, and I think from the interior perspective, this actually seems that it could become a production interior. It doesn't look too fancy, from what we can see from the pictures, that this is very far away from a production interior. Also with the steering wheel, looks very much ready to go. And that's going to be very interesting to see at what point this comes in into the production cars. Something that probably we won't see right away from Nissan is the IMK concept. And they have had the IM series of concepts for quite some time now, and so it's going to be interesting to see what we or let me ask this way: what do you think of this IM concept from Nissan?
I mean, this isn't for me. This is this is a little city urban runabout. I guess the wheels are just so tiny. Compared to the body to glass ratio, the body to wheel ratio, it looks like a little toy thing. For the urban environment, I'm sure it works just fine. But from an aesthetic perspective, it's really small. Narrow, and it's really tall. So none of those elements make for a particularly pleasing exterior aesthetic. Again, Nissan is doing well in terms of lighting on the exterior of these cars. I think, from the front end as well, it's got a very clearly, demarcated DRG. Like, it's very unique and individual with these like lighted grills and, you know, really slender lamps, just kind of the full width of the hood as well. It's from that perspective, I guess they tried to make it more, aggressive looking, perhaps more appealing. It's not really all that cute, but you know, I guess the issue that I have is the side profile. But again, it's going to be a very practical car, probably. And you know, the tires are just so tiny, and I've never been a big fan of 4-spoke wheels. I think you need 5 spokes to kind of give it some movement. But it's. I don't know much about this thing. It's, it's to me, it looks like a modern version of a little K car, but, with a couple of Nissan design elements, particularly in the lower light catcher on the body side, but, and then the rising shoulder and all the rest, but it's not, it's not to my taste. And, it's all right. I mean, it's not something that I would want to be seen in or to have in my garage.
I find some of the details a little bit strange. There's a kind of rotten grass carpet in there. It's a weird brown that just looks a little bit strange.
The interior is nice. I mean, with the colorways and the wood, and it's got the warmth and the lights, and again, a very strong copper theme. So on the pedals, on the IP, on the stalks, on the steering wheel, everything is kind of alluding to this electric future again. But I don't know, white again on an interior. I don't know, but it is a concept. So whatever.
Yeah. Okay. But can we just say one thing? Interiors should never be white. I think we both agree on that one. And I have to say, I absolutely hate brown exterior paints. I just don't understand why anybody would do that. I do understand it. Even if it's bronze, brown, any kind of these kind of colors, for details, yes, no problem whatsoever. But as main colors, I find this extremely difficult. Not up my alley whatsoever. And then combine it with white, it's just like, what are we? Like, we're back in the 70s or whatever.
Yeah, well, it's like they say, fashion kind of comes in cycles, and it's very much on trend now. The brown or the bronze colors on Japanese vehicles. I mean, as I remember, a kid, a friend of mine when we were in university, had a Toyota that was champagne, and champagne is basically just a light brown, and that color always kind of threw me off. But it is very much a Japanese thing, very much like purple, for example, which Mercedes kind of honed in on as well in terms of the feeling of luxury. I mean, the purple color, for example, is an Infiniti trademark color, but these browns and these bronze earth tones are very much a trend, as are the white interiors, it would appear, from the last few motor shows that we've seen. So, to each their own taste,
Of course. All right. Speaking of taste, I would like to move on to the Mitsubishi MiTech, I'm not 100% sure, concept, which kind of builds a little bit on the Evolution, and there's two E's in there. That's why I'm stressing that E a little bit, that we saw 2 years ago at the Mitsubishi stand. This is, from what we know, the first car that was done with the help of Alessandro D'Ambrosio, who took over at Mitsubishi as, I think, chief designer under Kunimoto-san about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I find this a bit strange. It's somehow cool, but at the same time, it's just like, it looks like a Hot Wheel or something like that. I mean, what do you think? This is the epitome of Tokyo. I mean, this is what Tokyo stands for. It's like, well, this is strange, kind of cool, but still strange.
Like you say, it's very much Tokyo. It's this is the type of stuff that you kind of expect out of a motor show, out of a Japanese motor show. It's I don't see any real use to this. It's a two-passenger beach buggy, essentially. It's the Japanese Mitsubishi's take on a on a beach buggy from the 70s, or you know, that was kind of within California culture. So if that's what they're trying to mimic, then I guess it's successful. I don't know. I mean, because it's a concept, it's going to be, you know, there's certain elements, perhaps the front face of that car, or, you know, the body side cladding, or maybe the rear or something like that, that is going to make it over to production, perhaps the tail lamps, things like that. But I don't really see any practical use for an open air two-seater 4x4. You know, I don't really, I mean, look, if they want to have fun and they want to blow some money on showcasing a concept that's going to get people talking about it, to me, it just kind of smacks of vulgarity. I don't really see anything, particularly interesting from a design perspective. It's, you know, yeah, let's just have some fun and see what we can make with whatever budget and showcase our EV, plug-in, powertrain. So I don't know. I'm not a fan. It's not for me.
I would like to say one thing. Like, I'm quite happy about this, especially compared to looking back at the Volkswagen EV buggy that they did, because that was just terrible. This one, it's crazy, you know. But do I like the design? Man, this is confusing as hell, but it sure is fun. Would I rent this for a day just to, like, you know, go crazy in some dunes and stuff like that? Yes, I would. Would I ever buy something like this? Oh, hell no. Like, you know, that would be a bit embarrassing driving around with something like this. But as really like a fun car, I mean, you know, if you would imagine, I don't know, going to the Emirates and going into the desert and you have this car to drive around, that would be good fun, you know. I mean, this is the thing, and this is in the end for me what I like about the Japanese is, like, you know, they're still seeing the fun in these kind of things, and they're a little bit strange, but you know, I would love to hear more from listeners and comments on this one, because I just have no idea what to think of it. It's cool. It's weird. I don't know. Is it needed? Is it necessary? Does it have any kind of purpose? It's almost going back to the Audi we saw in Frankfurt, this kind of moonraker car or whatever it was. It's just like, okay, so you spend money on this. Like, did you not have any kind of other ideas, or, like, you know, other things to maybe showcase how you can be more sustainable, or, like, a little bit more, you know, eco-friendly and stuff like that? But hey, sometimes you need to spend money for fun, right?
I guess. I mean, the only kind of redeeming factor is the interior and the IP. The air vents are quite interesting with the, you know, the shape of them. You know, so that is interesting. And it's a kind of a recurring theme where they've explored that graphic in the grill and behind the seats and on the IP for the HVAC. And, you know, that's kind of cool. And again, if this is an open top concept with no roof, then, you know, I guess they kind of have to keep things fairly water resistant. Yeah. So I guess that would work. Yeah. And the one thing that I do actually really like about it is, again, they're showcasing technology, even in a vehicle like this, where they have the entire windscreen just become a head-up display. So it's showing everything in terms of, like, yaw angle and everything for off-road driving, which is, you know, can be quite useful, you know, when you're driving off-road. But then they just have this very little tiny screen in front of the steering wheel, so it's not overrun with technology. And, you know, everything's kind of operated by this iDrive controller in the centered console. And, yeah, I mean, it's got certain little redeeming factors from a technology perspective. And, you know, it's, I think it's clean from an IP perspective. But yeah, it's not something that I see particularly relevant.
And I think that brings us to the next one. And let's talk about Lexus. Lexus has showcased the car, the LF30 concept, which was actually conceived in the Nice studio in France by Ian Cartabiano, leading the team over there. And this is very much Lexus, I would say, from the show cars that we've seen from them. Quite experimental, gullwing doors as well, massive gullwing doors, I have to say, on a very little hinge, to open. So well done to the guys who built that kind of car, because that seemed a little bit, like a task and like a challenge to do something like that. But very Lexus, very... predicting what they think of the future of luxury, automobiles, cars, vehicles can be. But it also looks like, we'll probably never see the light as it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I've actually heard that it is quite kind of near production, this thing, and I don't know how close to production it would be. It's got a lot of very interesting features that we've seen on many other Lexus vehicles in the past. Like the seats, for example, extremely lightweight, transparent with just this fabric covering a shell. It's something that we've seen before, and it's like a kinetic seat from maybe 6 years back. Really very interesting. I like this car. To me, this was the star of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is busy. There's a lot going on. There's like some fluid organic surfacing. There's the spindle grill taking on a new identity of its own, like massive, just the entire front face is this Lexus spindle grill. But I do like the plunging windscreen, all the way almost to the front of the car. It gives it this really very futuristic profile and aesthetic, where you've got just this massive piece of glass going all the way from the rear to the front of the vehicle, and it's quite it's quite dynamic looking. It's definitely over the top, definitely out there. The rear is like really space age, very very sci-fi thing over here. But again, this is a car that is powered by in-wheel electric motors. I mean, everything is very futuristic about this. So why not have the aesthetic kind of play into that story? So the narrative is really quite good. And again, I think it was the, for me, not having been to Tokyo, having seen only photographs of what was unveiled there, this to me appears to be the star of the show.
It does have some really cool details. You mentioned already the seats. They look very interesting. What I like about it is it doesn't look over the top from the interior, at least from the pictures that we have seen. It seems that it could become feasible rather soon, maybe apart from the steering wheel. I think this is, a little bit like, Blade Runner style from that side. But, it has a little head-up display. It has obviously a couple of screens. For me, it's similar to what we've mentioned with the Mitsubishi as well. This is also very much, Tokyo. I mean, this car fits the show perfectly. It's a bit over the top, but it's not absolutely crazy, so that you would say, like, oh my God, what is going on with them? There's enough clues in there that could become into a production car, but it still plays with the idea of, hey, look, what we would be capable of doing if we wouldn't have, some safety restrictions and all these kind of things. What I do find very interesting is this extremely subtle use of lighting. If you look into the front, the actual lights, the front lights, they are really nicely integrated actually into, the edges, into the carryover of the front. I do very much like that. From the rear as well, it's a very subtle use of the lights, but still very prominent in that one. That obviously has to do with the color job as well, so that it fits very well. This is like a turquoise, shiny green that they're using with some black accents in there. So if you have, a very like a whitish front light and a reddish rear light, then there's a nice little contrast in there. The only thing that I would like to say, there's some parametric modeling in there as well. So like, guys, you don't need that, especially in like, the rear, which would probably go towards the C pillar from that side. So, I'm not quite sure if this is required. This is what makes it a little bit too much. But generally speaking, I would agree this is probably the most comprehensive of the show cars being shown in Tokyo. And probably the one where we say, like, this is quite cool. And if elements of that make it into really the production car, then we're pretty happy about this. And speaking of show cars from Toyota, because obviously Lexus is part of Toyota, let's talk about the Toyota e-racer concept, which I have a little bit of a feeling this might come to Gran Turismo Sport at some point in the future. I like it. It's, you know, it's a nice little racer. It's a one-seater, cool racing car, quite simple. It's made for driving, and it's kind of a little bit strange that this is also supposed to be a autonomous vehicle, because when I see this, this is like, oh, this is something I would like to drive. This is nothing where I would just like sit in and being, you know, driven around the corner with, like, you know, 150, 200 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, the e-racer elements of this car's name means that it's, you know, it's very much going to be, you know, one of these cars that is made for the autonomous era, but that still allows you to kind of pilot it around on a race course if you want to have some fun or whatever. You know, I guess, you know, that is, you know, makes sense. It's a single seat little sports car, you know, and from aesthetically, it's majorly challenging. But it's actually a two-seater car.
I can see the second seat. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it looks like, I don't know. I mean, it looks very much like something out of a video game. And it's two seats in tandem. So, you know, we've seen this kind of before as well on other concepts, but it's very, to me, very challenging. It looks very much like an insect. And, you know, it's, I don't know, the roll bar, the way that it comes over the sides onto the top of the car, it's, I don't know. It looks like a praying mantis of some sorts. It's like, I don't know. I'm not a fan of this, but, you know, again, maybe this is skipping my generation entirely. You know, it's going back to, you know, people that play video games. I don't. people that, you know, appreciate these, like, you know, things. I'm sure if I got behind the wheel and I took it around the track, I'd be quite interested. But, you know, looking at it, it's very much a flight of fancy. Another sci-fi element.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these cars, like I said, that will probably be presented in Gran Turismo, similar to the recently presented Jaguar Gran Turismo car that we're going to talk about next time in the in normal podcast. So, this will not come to life. This will probably be a digital car, and for that, you know, I'm not mad at it at all. It aims towards like a KTM Crossbow, maybe, you know, a back mono or something like that. But it's nothing that will probably see the light from what we can see, and that's probably not a loss or a bad thing in that sense. But what will see the light, and this is the last one we're going to talk about today, is the Toyota Mirai concept, which is very, very close to production and will be released in 2021. And that was, for me, a bit of a surprise, actually. I knew the Mirai before, didn't necessarily like it at all. This one looks much sportier. Seems like, you know, taking some clues with a massive grille from Aston Martin, which is technically something I personally don't like. But that was actually a surprise. That was not bad for what we expected from a Mirai.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I initially saw, because this car was actually unveiled before the show, it was probably the first car unveiled. It was shown before the show was even on. And like you say, the Mirai has been out before. This is, you know, Toyota's hydrogen fuel cell vehicle that is available right now on the roads, but it looks very, very strange and like an ugly duckling, some would say. And it takes a lot of design cues from the Prius, actually, but it takes it even a step further, and it looks quite, vulgar, I would say. Now, this is quite elegant when you compare it to the current car. It seems like it's quite a bit bigger. Like, again, when I first saw the images that they released, the press images, it was almost like it was stretched, mm-hmm. like it was shot on a wide angle lens, because it looked totally like the front end was way long, the lamps were seriously stretched out and everything. To see it in real photos, I guess, is a little bit better. It's not as stretched as I thought it would be. But yeah, this is definitely a step forward, in my opinion. It's more elegant, certainly, more pleasing aesthetically, less polarizing. So if you want something that already has a, you know, an experimental, quote unquote, engine, power source, shall we say, then, you know, maybe you don't want to draw attention to yourself quite as much as with the current generation Mirai. So the new one is definitely much more subtle. And, you know, it's still a Toyota. You can tell. It actually has a lot of, particularly on the body side, and I think maybe even the front face and the headlamps, some Lexus feel to it. But yeah, it's more of a proportionally better looking vehicle, and more traditional, certainly, than the current Mirai.
Definitely agree with what you just said. I think this car is actually, you know, you have a little bit of a feeling it's made for a more global market rather than maybe just a local market such as Japan. I mean, this car seems, from a design perspective, much more ready for a U.S. market. I think, especially with, you know, some design clues, I think they're more U.S.-oriented than maybe European-oriented. But in general, the push for a little bit more sophistication, subtleness in the design is very, very welcome, I think, from Toyota. Again, the only thing for me is this massive grille. I've criticized it with the new Vantage. There is absolutely no closure to the grille, so it looks, from a graphic perspective, very similar to just like Hole. I'm personally not a massive fan of this, but I also do have to say I'm not an expert on fuel cell. The kind of cooling of the fuel cell. So there's probably a reason to have it like that. But in general, I would say this is a good step forward for the guys over at Toyota with that kind of car. And and definitely, you know, if that is any kind of clue to maybe what could happen to a Prius, then, you know, I'm looking forward to the next Prius from that side.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's as aerodynamic, but again, it's got a fastback, you know, like Audi A5 type thing, sportback looking thing. So I can't imagine that it would fare worse aerodynamically. But it definitely is far more elegant. And, you know, again, and what's interesting actually is this kind of integrated ducktail spoiler that they've got on the rear, which probably has everything to do with aero. As to why it is that they created that. And I think it's quite appealing, certainly, from certain angles, the rear three-quarter in particular. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting car, well-proportioned. Whether or not they need that massive, like, you know, hood, you know, it's definitely got a good dash-to-axle ratio, which lends more towards kind of luxury proportions, certainly over the previous vehicle. And yeah, I mean, I think it's nice. And again, I think, yes, it's very much geared towards the American market, which is where they're experimenting quite heavily with hydrogen vehicles. And they've been testing hydrogen fuel cells over there in California for quite some time. And yeah, I think from that market perspective, this is the definition of an elegant car, as opposed to a Prius or certainly the current generation Mirai.
All right, then we got through a virtual walk around through the Tokyo Motor Show 2019. Thank you, Eric, for taking the time, as always, to record this lovely little podcast with me.
Pleasure.
For everybody, because we have not mentioned this in the beginning, the people can find you on Instagram as well as on Twitter at Concept House, that is me, at Formtrends. on yes. both channels. And yeah, so you can find me on social media channels on at Concert House. That's how we where we operate on with most of the pictures that we're sharing and all these things and sketches in particular from Eric's side. So follow us on that one. Please do leave us some feedback on the podcast. If you are on iTunes and listen to us on the Apple platform, please do give us a 5-star rating because that helps to push us a little bit into the rankings over there. And for everybody else, follow us, of course, on Spotify, Deezer, in your Podroll, wherever you are, you know, Overcast, whatever you're using. And in that sense, we're looking forward to the next normal episode where we'll be talking about the latest cars in, the next few days, I would say, Eric. Yeah, so next week or something like that. That's probably the plan.
Next week, yeah. Sounds about great.
Cool.
Yep. Sounds about right. Good. Well, thanks very much, guys, for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
And till the next one. Thanks, Martin.
Take care. Bye.
Cheers.